Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me as always is Steve. How are you doing?
John, I'm great. Enjoying fall weather, wearing layers. I'm getting a pumpkin spice latte tomorrow. How are you, my friend?
You could literally be anywhere in the continental United States. I think that's everywhere.
That's everywhere. I love freezing. Is it freezing? I don't know. I really enjoy this sort of, you know, cooler thing. I get to sleep better. I get to, again, enjoy my hot coffee in the morning. I really lean into it as well. I'm just doing great. Just super happy to be here.
Wow, you're such a positive guy. You should be working at a fintech. You should be a sales guy.
Yeah.
CEO.
To the moon, baby. To the moon. Or a CFO, rather.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, there's no shortage of hype. That's for sure. You know, the valuations on these things, I think you're not the only one that's overly positive these days.
Overly optimistic. That's the name of the game, John.
So with that in mind, how much do you think Pinterest is worth?
Oh God, good question. Pinterest. I don't know. I have to admit, because I'm a dude and I don't do a lot of e-commerce, I've never used Pinterest. I've never actually used Pinterest.
How dare you? How dare you?
I hate to gender a company. I know. I hate to gender a tech platform, but I don't use Pinterest. I don't know, but I'm assuming several billion dollars.
Yeah, actually, you know, it is more than half Pinterest pinners are women between the ages of 24 and 49. So you're not, you know, you're not off saying that it does skew a bit female, but you know, it's worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for it.
Exactly.
And in this case, more than $40 billion is, I think I saw a number of around $45 billion, because this is still sources and unnamed sources and reports of talks of Pinterest getting bought out by PayPal.
Interesting. So I can't tell you about Pinterest as a platform, but I know why it wouldn't make sense for PayPal to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people are putting all of their desired product, fashion, so many things that you can show off in such a visual medium like a Pinterest focuses on. It seems like a natural for e-commerce for somebody to take advantage like that and want it for their own.
It is, yeah. And sort of on the e-commerce space, there's another PayPal property that they acquired recently that I do use a lot, and that is Honey. I love Honey. Honey is basically a browser extension that will automatically populate and test coupons for you as you shop on e-commerce site. You know, free shipping, you know, 10% off or what have you. And it mostly works. So I see why Pinterest also makes sense for PayPal, because with this, they have ambitions to basically become a fully integrated super app. And imagine having access to like things people want, then a way for people to pay for them as well in one platform. That would be pretty amazing. I think that's a pretty neat, not an Amazon killer per se, but a really good proposition for PayPal there.
And it's like I was mentioning, it's kind of a desirable customer base as well. Let's see, they say that it's 45% of people in the US have an income of greater than $100,000 that are on Pinterest. And
so
80% have discovered a new brand or product on Pinterest, which makes a lot of sense. If you're just searching around, you kind of go from one thing to another and you discover new things.
So it's younger, affluent people. That's really the mix that you want for your product, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a couple hundred million people that are pretty well off. A good deal. So yeah, it'll skew now more toward an e-commerce and payment services if this deal with PayPal goes through.
And it's interesting because I noticed that when the news leaked out, essentially the Pinterest shares skyrocketed. They went up over 10% or so. But PayPal shares actually tanked, which seems to be kind of a weird sentiment given that PayPal has been very open in the fact that they want to become the super app. And this seems to be sort of a step in that direction as well. So I'm not sure why the market is reacting in the way that it did.
Sounds like a lot of money to pay. But sure. It takes some long time to get that paid back, for sure. Yeah, the stock was down almost 6% as of this recording, late October. So yeah, not exactly the market saying this is a bargain price or anything.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the wrong time to buy from a price perspective. A house, a social media app, all of it.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the PayPal, the super app as well. I think it was just a few weeks ago, they released the new design that's focused on all these different products. You can store coupons, card points. You can buy cryptocurrencies, payments. You can pay your bills on there. Just about everything on there. So I think they're kind of the first truly super app in the US.
Interesting. I rarely use PayPal, actually. I used it maybe 2 weeks ago when I won my fantasy baseball league. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
And I got paid in PayPal, but I haven't actually used the app to for other than transferring money to my bank account almost immediately after I get money in there.
Well, yeah, payments is a thing across the board. So you can tell me, there's been a whole pattern around this. You can tell me, after we go through these stories, is social media invading payment, or are payments invading social media platforms?
Ooh, good question. So we'll put a pin on that one.
The next one, Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter is now going to take Bitcoin as a tipping for people on there, for creators, I guess. Now, they already take fiat currency through Squares, the Cash App, and Venmo. And now they're integrating the Strike Bitcoin Lightning wallet service, so creators can receive Bitcoin tips as well. And so this makes a lot of sense, because Jack Dorsey has been like a big crypto guy. He's been a proponent, so he's integrating this with Twitter.
So how does this work? This means that I post a really funny tweet that you like, or something that you like, and you tip me, if you see the tweet, you tip me in Bitcoin.
It sounds like, well, however they do with the fiat currency now, Bitcoin will just be another option. It's through their tip feed.
I've never seen the tips feature either, even though I use Twitter so much frequently.
They know who's not going to tip. I know you. Don't even bother putting it on Steve.
They know my profile. They know what I'm doing. Yeah.
So Twitter's also going to be supporting, now they just announced, so there's no details, but supporting NFT digital asset as well. So another nod to supporting creators who are doing digital art or whatever else that can be supported as an NFT through Twitter as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, it's I guess this is good for the creators. It's good for the people who want to get paid in Bitcoin. But imagine, say, there's a really funny story about a guy who paid, I don't know, like maybe like 14 Bitcoin for a pizza like 10 years ago or something.
That was a long time ago. That infamous story.
The infamous story.
I think it was more than that. Something worth some tens of millions now. Yeah.
Right. So imagine, you know, if I take you, say, $400,000 in money, you know, 10 years from now, how that would feel.
Okay. On those Bitcoin tips?
Yeah.
Not, well, I wouldn't propose Bitcoin as a payment medium quite yet. More like something you hold on to. I like the gold analogy a bit.
Meaning what?
Meaning like a commodity, a store of value, rather than a payment back
right,
and forth.
Yeah. Right, right,
which
right.
Maybe so a stable coin kind of thing would be better for that.
Right.
Hang on to that Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Set a new record.
I'm going to give you a tip, but don't spend it. Put it in your 401k or something else, or keep it in your wallet. Just don't spend it.
Yeah. You creators out there with your Bitcoin Twitter via Twitter tip. Yep. Lots of social media. Okay. So a third story, Facebook, is it the biggest social media company? Yeah, pretty sure.
By far.
Rolling out its, rolling out its testing, a pilot program for its Novi digital wallet. Now, this doesn't have to do with their blockchain effort. This is just a digital wallet, which they're getting less pushback on. So I guess it makes sense that they would move that forward. But they're piloting it in the US and Guatemala, of all places.
And Guatemala, not El Salvador. Very interesting.
Right. Well, like they might have enough to deal with their Bitcoin to have another distraction. Actually, this one doesn't support Bitcoin. It's using the Paxos stablecoin in partnership with Coinbase so that they can send and receive money with no fee.
Oh, that seems like a societal good. But I understand that there's been some political pushback from the Democratic side. Why the pushback? Why is this so bad? Why the backlash?
I think it's both sides. I think it's universal. That's a maybe a bipartisan thing. Everybody hates Facebook.
And it's just because they're not good about privacy, and people feel like they're ceding control over the money system when they enable companies to kind of play in this space.
Right. Yeah. The regulatory issues, the lack of trust, the getting away from the federal government managing currency. And did I mention lack of trust?
Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook's not, doesn't have the best brand right now for that. So, but if you store your own money and, you know, they can transfer it without any fee, maybe that will engender some goodwill.
One would hope, but why? So this also happened with Libra as well, maybe 2 years ago. So why would Facebook get back
now
into
known
the
as
well?
Diem, by the way. This is Diem, the Facebook cryptocurrency part of this, or I should say blockchain part of
it. Why dip their waters back into the crypto payment space if it was not a great outcome the first time around?
Well, they haven't given up on it. Yeah, they're still working on it. And if they see some kind of value on building their site into e-commerce and offering instant payments and all these blockchain-based services, I think Mark Zuckerberg sees that as a future, and, you know, correctly so. But they're still working on a lot of regulatory issues. So they're kind of in regulatory limbo on the for getting any approval for their cryptocurrency and blockchain product. So for now, they can at least provide this wallet, this Novi wallet. And just they call it F2, Facebook Financial. And So this is going to test the core wallet features, operations, and crucially compliant. It at least works for stablecoins. And then they'll add in more and more digital assets as the pilot and testing works out.
That's a really that's quite interesting. But what's your take? Will Novi be around 3 years from now? 80% likely, 50% likely. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know if the digital wallet part of it is that risky. I mean, it's not exactly easy, and their ambitions are huge. I mean, this is a global rollout, but it seems like they're very determined. And I think you'll see this as one of many digital wallets and stablecoin real-time payments providers.
Is there any way that this is tied, by the way, to the metaverse, which I'm really fascinated by?
Right. Well, we say Facebook now. Maybe by the time we release this, it'll be called something else. But yeah. I think there's an announcement at the end of October. They said they were going to have some kind of announcement coming up soon, right, on that new name.
That's right. Yeah, I think they're going the alphabet route. They're basically want to become a conglomerate.
Yeah, right. I still can't get used to the alphabet part of it.
I know. It's still just Google. It's like Burma. It'll always be Google for me.
Yeah, alphabet's such a generic word too. The alphabet? Alphabet? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Always fun.
Well, social media platforms, you know, have hundreds of millions and billions of users on their platforms. So it just makes sense that they would be a target for e-commerce and payment, because you go where people are already, right? Why you have to attract them to your app and your particular platform when they're already on Facebook or Pinterest or Twitter, right?
It's peanut butter and jelly, John. It just makes sense.
Just makes sense. Is that the Reese's Pieces? The butter cup thing?
Those are Reese's peanut butter cups, which I don't like, by the way. Not a huge fan of those.
I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just give me peanut butter on bread, like a normal person. Just give me a sandwich.
Like a normal person, right?
Peanut butter and jelly on bread. Yes, like a normal person. Thank you.
What is it? I think at WhatsApp is starting to integrate payments as well. So I think it's payments invading social media. It's already there. You're already sharing your favorite product, and it's kind of ready-made to be an e-commerce platform. So, I mean, everything is going to have embedded finance in it, basically.
Yeah, like someone famous once said, everything is fintech now.
Everything is fintech now. Software eats the world, man.
Software eats the world, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So fintech becomes social media, and those are kind of getting closer aligned. It's almost like when you mentioned social media, like fintechs are part of the conversation. But another thing that's boosted fintechs are SPACs. I mean, that's been driving another pathway to get a lot of money into fintech. Yeah.
I'm assuming they actually do go out the door. Yeah, absolutely. So there's two famous ones, somewhat prominent fintechs that are going public via SPACs. As you mentioned, one is Aspiration and the other is MoneyLion. So in the case of Aspiration, this is so interesting. Back in maybe 2007 or 8 or so, Radiohead released an album called King of Limbs, which the whole premise was that, you know, the King of Limbs, like limbs, like arms. Yeah, like arms, legs, okay. And all that. And when they released it, they basically said, hey, you can pay what you want. People paid $1 or $3 or $4 or $5. Most, because they're a huge fan of the band, paid, you know, a few bucks. And with that, they were actually able to make more money from that album sort of at the, you know, at the tail end of the CD era than from other previous albums. Long way of saying that Aspiration has a very similar model to what Radiohead tried to do 10 years ago, which is that they ask customers to pay, quote unquote, what is fair. And as you can imagine, asking customers for tips in sort of a fintech setting doesn't produce great results. So Aspiration wants to go public at a $2.3 billion valuation. That's $2.3 billion. And guess how much they actually had in revenue in 2020? Less than $15 million.
And wait, they don't charge any fees? Everything is optional?
They charge, I think they charge fees for some transactions, but it's mostly pay what is fair. Which again, as a customer, you'd be like, what's fair is zero. Thank you. You're basically a bank.
The CEO is, let's say, a millionaire. So I'm going to say I'll keep my money here.
I'm going to keep my sense. Yeah. Yeah. So okay. It's, so famously their pitch deck is making the rounds. And if you really dig into the numbers, it's really interesting how they can, you think that I'm an optimist. These guys, I have no idea how they're justifying a $2.3 billion valuation for this company. Again, given the really low number. So you essentially have to pay, you tip for everything you do on the app, whether that be a loan, taking money out and all that, which seems to not have worked for them. And one thing to point out is that Aspiration is actually, it's a new bank. It's a new bank in with those who want to, you know, reforest the world and not fund oil and gas. So actually they place a lot of ads on podcasts that I listen to now. And it's all about, for every dollar that you spend, you can plant a new tree and all these things.
To some hippy dippy podcast, huh?
No, this is all like business stuff. But even then, they're kind of promoting their whole, we will not fund oil and gas projects. We will be a better bank and all that, which is a great message. I think that's where the industry should be, but it's just not translating into actual business success.
$14 million in total revenue. That's it, huh? And
14.7. Yeah.
Well, they want $2.3 billion.
They want $2.3 billion.
I want $2.3
billion. We all do. I bet that
That's revenue. So, of course, they're losing a ton of money.
Of course.
Because they always say, we're reinvesting in the company.
Exactly. But that's revenue. That's revenue. So that's all revenue. Money coming in.
So a money-losing thing with an optional payment with a very noble goal and a target.
It's quite noble. It's all about sort of the ESG space, which is really hot right now. So hot right now, all the greenwashing stuff makes sense. But I don't know how this one actually gets out the door. We'll see. But as we'll talk about later on, creating a new bank is extremely, extremely hard.
So they're not exactly the Radiohead of fintech. They're more like the Weird Al.
They're more like, yeah, the Weird Al.
If Weird Al was also not successful.
Yes.
Weird Al lost a lot of money.
Yeah. Accordion. Less accordion.
Well, no, you know what? I've only seen the marketing. Like, it looks great. They will plant a tree with every new checking account. I think I saw something.
They have great marketing, yeah.
And the design's really well done. Actually, the way you paint it, or the way it is, I guess, is I also want my checking account be with a company that's still going to be around in a few years. But it sounds pretty risky.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I they might be FDIC insured. I have no idea, but
yeah. You don't want to have to change and your bank went out of business. All right, tell me, it gets better from here, right?
Oh, it gets way better. The other company going public, the other fintech rather going public via SPAC is MoneyLion. And, you know, they're much more interesting. It's a great name, right?
MoneyLion. Hear us roar. We're MoneyLion.
Hear me roar. Yeah. I think it's more like hear me whimper, by the way.
Where's the story? Okay.
So the story is that MoneyLion is very much interested in having all these features. So they offer things like buy now, pay later, which we all know quite well. They offer crypto. And they really hone in on the fact that fees are awful, which is true. Fees are terrible. Other studies show that the poorer customers tend to bear the brunt of the burden in terms of fees paid to bank. And it's just not,
I love paying my bank fees.
I know.
It's the no best one thing in the ever, world, right? Right?
Okay. Said no one ever.
Yeah. So they paid for a lot of research to find out that people don't like fees.
That people don't like fees. Okay. And guess where a lot of the MoneyLion revenues come from, John?
Tips. Bitcoin tip.
Yeah. No, it's fees. It's 80% fees, actually. They will charge you a fee for everything from getting a cash advance, which makes sense, to cash initiating advance. A loan. Okay. If you enter into a loan agreement for them, you actually pay a maintenance fee of $19.99 a month, which is just insane.
A maintenance fee for a loan. Okay, so I get a loan on top of the interest.
You pay interest and the fee. And again, they drive 4/5 of their revenue come from fee as well. So, MoneyLion, stop roaring. It's giving me a headache.
So this is the anti-aspiration.
It's the anti-aspiration. They're more about, the more aggressive, roar, no fees, kick-ass, take names in fintech. But, oh my goodness, not a great business model.
And guess, their revenues are higher than $14 million.
I haven't seen their revenues, but it has to be a bit higher than $14 million. Yeah.
Yeah, it probably is.
It probably is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they ask you to tip on top of that?
They ask you to tip on top of that. Is which that what again, you said? I'm wondering how many customers actually say, yes, take my fee and here's a few extra bucks.
I wonder if they have like a little jar, a glass jar icon.
Yeah, dude, karma. Would be good karma. For that. We'll keep an eye on these. We'll see how they go. But it's hard to build a neobank, John. Super hard to build an actual functioning money-making neobank.
But there's so many of them. I think, are they, even the largest ones lose money still, right? I mean, sure, they're growing and investing. It's hard to tell which ones have a pathway out into making money, into being sustainable.
Financially sustainable,
not environmentally sustainable.
Right. For that, we have aspiration. Thank you. But for other banks, so for example, N26 raised recently $900 million. And that's not to grow, but to actually help them pull back from some markets and focus on their core product. So even the well-funded sort of bell of the ball N26 in Europe is still not financially feasible.
Well, they're all raising money. I mean, because they're raising money because you see new numbers on their valuations, on their latest rounds. I think Chime just raised money a little while ago. I think they're the biggest challenger bank in the US, new online-only bank. They just raised $750 million like 2 months ago. I guess they're on Series G, by the way.
Wow.
So if you're a common shareholder, if you're an employee and you're like, those common shares are going to be worth bank, you probably have to look at your dilution a little bit.
But it's interesting that Chime has taken sort of a different path, where Chime has a really boring product offering. It's basically
sorry,
checking
Chime
savings.
People listening. That's Steve talking, by the way.
No, I mean, it's they don't have to do anything with BNPL or crypto. They just offer checking, savings, and loans, basically. And they seem to be the one that are getting the most traction just by really honing in on their core business, their core products.
Yeah.
Stick to the knitting, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So they're the most boring neobank. They're arguably the most successful one. And again, no crypto, no BNPL, and no fancy tipping or anything. It's just the bank.
All this Chime talk is making me sleepy. Oh, man. So Chime is the anti-Robin Hood.
Chime is the anti-Robin Hood. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Robin Hood is fun, sexy, it's out there, take big risks, we'll support you. Sure, buy this. Go for it. We'll help you. We won't even charge you for it. Get some GameStop.
Calls, option puts, all of it. Do it. It's all you.
We don't care. We don't care. We're fine.
We don't care at all. Yeah, yeah. Do you want to talk about how there seems to be how a lot of the bigger companies who have tried to get into the fintech space have actually kind of failed, like Uber and Google?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I have heard that there was the whole Uber money thing, right?
Uber money. We had a friend of the pod a couple years ago, Suzanne Carr, was leading the efforts to launch sort of the Uber money product, and that seems to have failed. And then Google, of course, recently torpedoed their whole Googleplex, which is the way where they were going to offer a digital-only banking experience.
Their branded one. It's not easy. And you see that when other companies get their hands slapped. I mean, we just talked about Chime not being very exciting, maybe. But, you know, they got their hands slapped too when they used to market as being Chime Bank. And they had to remove all references to that. And, of course, Robinhood, we just mentioned, you know, there's a whole laundry list with them where their system's not going down. But yeah, it's not easy. And the compliance operations, everything. So you do see more announcements than actual product.
Yeah, it's both a combination of it's not easy, but also seems to be a space that's getting a lot of attention. And then you see also these companies trying to go public via SPAC. I'm wondering whether this is just them trying to kind of beat the looming recession and trying to get out now while the getting's good and the money's free flowing. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. All I know is that some compliance people, if they're listening, are like, see, you should have had us in from the beginning. Have a compliance guy. You didn't know. Of course you can't do that. I could have told you that from the beginning.
You need a compliance officer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Color within the lines, people.
There's kind of like the party poopers at these kind of tech meetings. Yeah, we can just do it. We can roll out 100 million bank accounts. And compliance guy's just shaking his head. No, you can't.
They're coming after you so hard. Yeah, and they will. Yeah. The long arm of the law will reach you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's our advice, right? Get a compliance guy in from the beginning. Plan it out a little. Invest up front.
Get a compliance person, do your research and see where others have failed so you don't repeat that same mistake.
I'm gonna have a new saying. Don't pull a Robin Hood. That means you didn't because didn't they say they were gonna offer like checking, and they were the ones, right?
They were the ones they were offering.
They had no idea
checking account.
They didn't check any of the rules. They just, we're gonna do this.
For them it was just words. Yeah, sure. We'll do checking. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, I saw a funny thing kind of related to that where like, move fast and break things. And it shows Mark Zuckerberg and his mission accomplished.
They certainly did. Yeah. How are Robinhood shares, by the way? How's their stock pricing?
I have no idea. Let me see. You're going to hear some clicking.
Oh, there we go. Click, live.
What is the, okay. What guess? What's the ticker?
A hood.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, good call. Okay, let's see. 6 months. Very spiky at the beginning and steadily down for the past 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So now we're down kind of a pretty straight pattern from the early 50s down to 41.28 today. And you know, there's some little ups and downs, but it's kind of a pretty steady. Good steady line towards that market. Slow cap steady. Still at 35 billion, so nothing to cry over. Oh, those poor founders,
poor billionaires,
nothing like that.
Yeah.
But not moving up.
Interesting.
The hype is past.
Yeah, I know that they're also getting into the crypto space as well. They're offering some other crypto solutions, so because I think they're looking to compete with Coinbase, so we'll see whether that moves the needle for them.
Yeah. Well, I know they're working on a ton of different products. You know, their hiring is all over the place. So yeah, definitely a case of the rebundling. I'll use a term from 2020.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Unbundle, rebundle, baby. And actually, I saw recently this product.
Yeah,
this is interesting because I saw that there's been sort of a change in attitudes, whereas a year ago, or I guess earlier this year, or sometime within the past, you know, during the pandemic, basically, money was going into the equity markets, and now people are pulling out and putting it into the crypto. So I think that Robinhood is looking at this. Yeah, for sure. Right. As have I. So it seems like there's kind of a flipping where people are, again, leaving the stock market and getting into the crypto space.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of a self-fulfilling thing. The more money goes in, the more the prices get driven up. So
yeah,
I'll take it for now. Just get out when the getting's good.
Exactly.
I'm going to sell exactly at the peak. That's my plan.
That's also my plan. Never works.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you have extra money to invest, I guess that's good for you.
I guess if you're in the top 10%, John.
Yes. Tell me about the top 10%.
So, interesting study came out recently that highlighted that essentially the wealthiest 10% of Americans own 89% of all U.S. stock. And that's a new record. So, again, 10% right. of the U.S. population owns almost 90% of all stock.
So if you wanted to know what it was like back in the Gilded Age, and there was mass inequality and a lot of really, really rich people and then everyone else, well, you don't have to wonder.
We're anymore. In it, baby.
We're in it. You're living the Gilded Age.
You're living through it, yeah.
It's the same kind of inequality, right, that happened at that time. It's like when there's new markets, new wealth created, there's drives some inequality, yeah?
It is. And it's funny how we always talked about sort of, you know, democratizing the stock market, broadening access to it, when people are investing, getting into it. But it's still a very, a very tiny percentage of the population they can claim.
That's too bad because I'm in the 11th percentile. So
you just missed out.
Just missed out. Yeah. Yeah. If only I was a little bit better off, I'd be part of that 89%. That's a lot. It's very that's pretty concentrated.
It is. We'll see where we end up here, John.
And
we'll
gets see. Very it's kind of ramps up, I think, as you go too. I mean, the top 1%, I'm sure, I think it's like still some big chunk. It's not like evenly distributed through that. The higher you go, they don't lose a lot of that as you go up.
No. They do not. I would wager that the top 5% own something like 95% of all stocks
of
in
that.
The US.
Well, on that happy note, we'll leave you this week.
I was so happy when we started. I was talking about pumpkin spice lattes and Wayne Layers and going on long walks and all this stuff, the Dune movie, which I'm looking forward to seeing. And now I'm all, a class warrior.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go watch Dune. That sounds good.
Same.
All right.
It's all about spice, baby. It's all about the spice.
That's it. That's right. Pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice and that other spice.
Melange and pumpkin spice latte, please. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.